This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Class of COVID-19. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. The abrupt and somewhat bumpy switch to online learning has probably affected kids' academic development, but it goes beyond that. What about all the stuff you learn in school that has nothing to do with textbooks and exams? Over the summer, we worked with a group of high school reporters. Jad Slayman teamed up with them and has this story.
School sucks. Ask any kid. But it turns out the only thing worse is not being able to go back. That and Zoom.
All you're doing is just staring at a screen all day and not doing anything else.
That's Nicholas Orlando Gonzalez. He's 10, lives in Philly. He's talking to one of the Pulse's student reporters, his cousin Caitlin Rodriguez.
Do you like online school? Do you feel like it's difficult or do you feel
kind
like
of
it's
difficult
hard?
Because at school, when you're actually at school, it's different because you get to, like, do activities with your friends and all this fun stuff, and it's just so difficult because you're just staring at a screen all day, and it's boring. And it's like being tortured by the internet.
On the one hand, like lots of adults, he's scared of the virus.
It's the lungs that are affected that they can't breathe. That's how their lives are ending, and I'm not trying to have that because I'm too young to die.
But he misses his friends, tells our student reporter about his best friend, Akeem, how they used to hang all the time, how they were fourth graders together, and now they're technically fifth graders, just not together.
Do any of those things, you know, make you sad that you can't see your teachers and friends?
Yes, it makes me very emotional and sad.
Well, how do you cope with being sad? What do you do to be less sad or be less mad that you can't go out anymore?
I kind of like rest it off, or I just cry until I feel like stop crying, until I feel like I need to stop crying.
Why do you cry?
Because it's just so hard that I don't get to see my friends no more. I just miss them all so much.
Remote learning for kids like Nicholas is all the boring parts of school without any of the fun little moments that make it worthwhile. Joking around in the few minutes between sitting down and the teacher demanding we turn to page this or that, the locker room razzing, the lunchroom roundtable discussions. But it's more than just fun. Development researchers say a different kind of learning happens here amid the countless social interactions that school provides.
In the beginning, nobody was talking about kids missing anything besides the academics. We're not really thinking about these kids that might really be losing a lot of skills that take time to develop.
That's Becca Lakin-Gulan. She's a professor of psychology at Gwinnett Mercy University in Pennsylvania and studies a kind of socialization older kids and young adults go through called emerging adolescence. It's something she thinks is lost in the back-to-school debate.
The American Academy of Pediatrics, they came out in June, I think, and made a statement that said kids should go back to school in person if at all possible. And I remember after that happened, people really, really, really got angry.
And with the virus actually picking up steam in parts of the country, they're scared.
And people weren't wrong in what they were saying, like, this is really scary and it's a health issue. But what the American Academy of Pediatrics was trying to do is say that it also matters to physically be present with other people.
Becca says these social interactions are a kind of practice for the roles we'll play at work and in adult life. They help us code switch between the person we are when we're talking job interview, when we're brainstorming with peers, or talking to a boss's boss. And even though all this stuff feels effortless, Becca doesn't think it is. We have to learn it. Tamar Kushner heads up the Early Childhood Cognition Lab at Cornell University. She told me about this lesson she learned in the second grade.
I very much remember having a friend who was, she was a smaller girl, and she was easily picked on. And she was very smart, and I liked her. She was smart and bookish, and we talked about books and things that, you know, things we read. There was a big, mean girl who found her, she's about half the size of this girl, and she just found her very easy to pick on.
Tamar, though, was a big kid herself.
And I wasn't afraid of this girl. maybe because I came up to her head as opposed to coming up to her knees.
One day, 8-year-old Tamar decided enough was enough. It was time to act. She walked over to the big, mean girl and her small, bookish friend, and she stood directly in between them.
And I learned how to stand up for my friend when my friend was being picked on. I learned how to put my body physically in between a person who was being mean and a person who I cared about.
The crucial thing to keep in mind about this whole episode is Tamar did what she did without anyone telling her to. She made the decision. Researchers think healthy people are born with this innate sense of something like right and wrong.
That we're social creatures and we're built with some capacity to understand harm and to be averse to it.
Whether or not you do act or how you act is where you get character, what Tamar calls moral agency.
One of the things that we in our lab think contributes to moral agency is just having made decisions yourself makes you feel empowered to do it again. So having one experience, you felt like an agent. You felt like you stood up and you said, no, this is wrong. Even just one experience like that can make you feel empowered to do it a second time.
I spoke with Tamar near the height of the Black Lives Matter protest that followed the police killing of George Floyd and other unarmed Black Americans. I asked her if she thought about the demonstrations differently, knowing all this. And Tamar says she sees all these strands of childhood social experience in the type of adults we become.
Learning how to help other people and stand up for what you feel is right, despite the fact that someone might be bigger and stronger than you, is a lesson that a child can learn at age 7 or 8 or 15 in a context where people are different.
Tamar says you learn from everyone you interact with, even those you don't really talk to. It's not just friends or bullies. Every single person brings some different variable that doesn't exist at your house, between you and your parents and your siblings.
You have to learn who you are and in relation to other people. And you can't learn any of that by doing worksheets or flashcards or math problems.
These are things we learn by interacting with others. You learn about the complexity of others, and you also learn who you are or who you can be. A big thing Tamar talked to me about is the way kids push themselves in school. They try their limits, but that's not so easy in a virtual setting.
When COVID happened, I felt lost.
That's Caitlin again, our student reporter. She's a rising sophomore at a performing arts high school.
I found myself becoming, instead of this, you know, extroverted Caitlin, this Caitlin that was so outgoing, so out there, someone that wasn't scared to do anything. I found that Caitlin becoming more timid.
Part of it, she thinks, is that the only role she gets to play at home is someone's kid.
That's just how it is. Teenagers all have their things to hide, and I'm someone who, you know, I have to put on that I'm your child personality, and I can't be the way I want to be.
Caitlin told me her freshman year at this artsy high school was like a chance at a fresh start, to be who she considered the real Caitlin, kind of quirky, kind of out there. She says she thrived off the energy of her classmates. She spoke up, but she worries all of that is changing.
Becoming more nervous about speaking in front of others. When I was someone who was the first one to raise my hand and be the first one to talk in front of all these people and not be scared of what they were going to say, but now I found myself scared. I found myself quiet.
Becca, the psychologist and researcher, told me she's worried about this type of thing happening to kids kept apart from their peers for too long. They unlearn the type of social interaction that used to be normal.
You know how they say, you know, you go, say you start working out, you start exercising. The first few days are just terrible. But then after a while, you just get out of bed and you do it, or you go and you do it, and it doesn't feel as exhausting. And I think that it's the same thing with social engagement. There was something to the fact that we were continually working that muscle.
The big worry for Becca is that when schools finally do open, too narrow a focus on academic recovery will take up all the air in the room. That things that build social interaction will be seen as extra. Recess will be canceled. That's on Caitlin's mind, too.
And now we're not going to go back to school until November. I have to learn how to be the way I used to be.
She's decided she can't just sit around waiting for school to open its doors.
I have to learn how to learn from the situations in my own household rather than the situations in school, and I have to learn how to thrive off of my own energy rather than other people's energies. And that's something that I have to work on.